Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. All right. Daniel chapter 8 is where we're going to be at this morning. If you want to go ahead and find Daniel chapter 8, we're going to kind of tackle it like we did last week, where we're going to read a little bit. And then we'll talk, and we'll read a little bit more and talk, and then we'll kind of put it all together at the end and maybe draw some points about what God's telling us today, how God's speaking through His Word to us today, and how that applies to our life. All right? All right. Well, let's kind of, before we do that, before we jump in, let's kind of recap where we were at last week, because it's going to play into where we're going to go this week. So last week, we had Daniel chapter 7. And we saw that Daniel chapter 7 is vastly different than Daniel chapter 1 through 6. It was apocalyptic visions of animals and beasts, and then of heaven, and then there was an interpretation. And through it all, we said sometimes it's very easy for us to get lost in all the apocalyptic vision stuff. But when we do that sometimes, not only is it very difficult to then figure out what it all means. And just because something's difficult in the Bible doesn't mean you shouldn't try, but you got to remember, apocalyptic visions are different than a narrative story about like Daniel and the lion's den. And so what we did is we said in Daniel 7, we need to look at the grand narrative that Daniel 7 is saying. And we saw a couple things. We saw that the grand narrative is that kingdoms will successively come and go throughout history. And inevitably, most of those kingdoms, empire, or what we would call nations today, a lot of them inevitably have a bent toward evil. And usually that bent toward evil affects people. And oftentimes it affects God's people. We also saw that at the end, one day, God is going to take all of their power and destructive influence away. And instead, His people are going to rule in a kingdom that will never end. Now, when's that day going to happen? We don't know. But it will happen one day. And out of all of that, one of the attitudes we said that we should take home with us is hope. Because one day, God's going to do something special and unique and once for all deal with the evil that's in the world. Right? So, that's where we kind of left off. Daniel's going to have another vision this week. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. It's going to be a little different, but it's going to be easier for us to understand, all right? And we're going to read through it, talk about it, draw some points from it, then apply it to our lives, like I said just a minute ago. All right, so let's begin reading Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, all right, so it's Babylonian. It's Babylon still in charge. It's the third year, so we're 2 years in the future from Daniel 7. A vision appeared to me, Daniel, after that which appeared to be at the first, meaning chapter 7's vision. So this is another vision. And I saw in the vision, and when I saw, I was in Susa, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw the vision, and I was on the Ulai Canal. All right, so let's stop there just for a second. Now, we don't know if Daniel was actually in the city of Susa or he was in the vision, he was in the city of Susa. But regardless, Daniel knew of the city of Susa and he knew of this canal. Susa is not in Babylon proper. It's actually in Iran. All right? But during this time, it would have been in the sphere of Babylonian influence and would have literally been on the edge of the easternmost part of the Babylonian Empire. Later, in years to come, Susa would be the winter capital of the Persian Empire. It's about 300 miles directly east of Babylon. So if you're trying to figure out where it's at today, it's about 300 miles kind of west and a little south of Baghdad. So to kind of get that in your mind, that's where it's at, all right? So Daniel's not in Babylon like he was last week. He's in another city, and he's by a canal, a water irrigation canal that's helping supply the city with water. And that's where he sees the vision. All right, so we're about to get in the vision. Let's read it. Verse 3. I raised my eyes and I saw, and behold, a ram standing on the bank of the canal. It had two horns, and both horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher one came up last. All right, so you got the picture? He's on the canal. At the canal, he sees a ram. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. We're going to talk about another animal that has horns in a minute. So you need to think of sheep, right? Because the minute we're going to talk about a goat. And I thought rams replied to male goats and sheep, but that's not true. So in your mind, you need to get a picture of a sheep with two horns. Now, what your sheep looks like, it doesn't matter. Just think of a sheep with two horns. You got that image in your mind? All right, let's go. All right. I saw the ram, the male sheep, charging westward, northward, and southward. No beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. All right? You got what's going on? The sheep's running around. The male sheep is running around, the ram, and he's destroying everything in his path, and nobody can stop him. All right, so that's what Daniel sees, is a wild, chaotic sheep running around. All right? Verse 5. As I was considering, behold, a male goat. All right. So you got the image of the sheep in your mind? Now you need to get the image of the goat. It doesn't matter what your goat looks like. It's a goat. Okay? All right, you got those two images? All right. I saw a male goat from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. He came across from the west without touching the ground very fast. And the goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. All right, so here's what your goat needs to look like. A unicorn. He's got a big unicorn horn, but it's a goat. All right, y'all with me so far? All right, so we've got a two-horned ram, sheep, and a unicorn goat. We good so far? All right. He came, that's the unicorn goat, came to the ram with two horns, which I had seen standing on the bank of the canal. And he ran at him in his powerful wrath. Okay, so the sheep is on the bank of the river, and the unicorn goat, and they are eyeing each other up, and here they go. All right. Verse 7. I saw him come close. That's the unicorn goat. Come close to the ram. And he was enraged against him and struck the ram. So the unicorn goat struck the ram and broke his two horns. And the ram had no power to stand before him. But he, that's the unicorn goat, cast him, the ram, to the ground and trampled him. And there was no one who could rescue the ram from his power. We good? You get what's going on? The two-horned sheep, ram, was powerful. But then when he met the unicorn goat crushed him, literally obliterated the ram. Verse 8. The goat became exceedingly great. But when he was strong, the great horn was broken off. So he's no longer a unicorn. And instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns toward the four winds of heaven. That just means four horns came up. So now he's a four-horned goat. Out of one of them, so out of one of the four, came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land. That's a phrase for the Holy Land. Okay? It grew great, even to the host of heaven. It's a big little horn. And some of the host, some of the stars, it threw down to the ground and trampled on them. It became great, even as great as the prince of the host, even as great as God, you know, in theory. And the regular burnt offering was taken away. All right, so time out. We've just moved. I want you to see the switch here. We just moved from stories about sheeps, horns, unicorn goats, that the horn breaks off and four more grow, to a little horn, and that little horn is doing real life stuff now. Okay, you with me? We've moved out of the theoretical vision-y picture to real life stuff. Because the real life stuff that happens is, and the regular burnt offering was taken away. The sacrifice in the temple in Israel was taken away. And the place of his sanctuary, God's, was overthrown. That means the temple was overthrown. And a host will be given over to it. That's the little horn. Together with the regular burnt offering because of transgression. And it will throw to the ground, it will throw truth to the ground, and it will act and prosper. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the one who spoke, "For how long is the vision concerning the regular burnt offering, the transgression?" Verse 13. "That makes desolate and the giving over the sanctuary and hosts to be trampled underfoot." And here's the answer. And he said to me, "For 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state." All right, let's pause. Let's take a big pause right here. Okay? All right, so let's recap the picture. In a vision, Daniel is behind a canal, a waterway in Susa, which is a city 300 miles east of Babylon. While he's standing there, he has a prophetic vision. God gives him a vision about the future. Okay, we'll learn this about the future in just a minute. In that vision, he sees a two-horned ram, a sheep, who's very powerful and is running everywhere and nobody can stop him. And then from the west comes a unicorn-horned goat. And when the unicorn-horned goat meets the ram, he utterly obliterates the ram, and the ram cannot stand in front of the unicorn-horned goat. And as soon as the unicorn-horned goat becomes great, that unicorn horn falls off, is broke off, and four other horns grow. And on one of those horns, it's like, think of it like a deer, but it's a goat, all right? Why is it a goat? I didn't give the vision. You can ask the Lord when you see him one day, all right? So he had four horns, and on one horn grew another one. And then that horn is the subject of the rest of the vision, because whoever that little horned goat thing is, he does stuff and it affects God's people. That's the vision. Now, in the remaining part of the chapter, a heavenly being explains what the vision means. And I'm going to summarize that for you right here, okay? It's on your handout too, by the way, if you want to look along on your handout. But here's what the heavenly being tells Daniel, because Daniel is utterly confused. He has no idea. He even says, I have no idea what's going on in this vision, right? And so a heavenly being, an angel-like figure, gives him the interpretation, just like happened last week. And so here's what the dream, or here's what the vision means. He says the ram, and you'll see this week, here's the interesting part. You'll see this week that the interpretation is much more specific. You remember last week's interpretation was the four beasts or four kingdoms, but we don't know what the kingdoms are, and then it's kind of generic, and so it's a broad overview of history. Today's interpretation is much more specific, okay? So here's what he says. He says the ram, the heavenly being tells Daniel that the ram with the two horns is representative of the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. So the Persian Empire. The ram is representative of the Persian Empire. He says the goat is representative of the empire of Greece. And that unicorn-horned goat is representative of its first king, who at the pinnacle of his greatness dies. And out of that kingdom come four other kingdoms, but they don't have the power that the unicorn horn king does. And out of one of those four kingdoms, the little horn, which is a king, arises. And the heavenly being tells Daniel that he is going to do some very bad things. He will have great power. He will have great ability to negotiate and to orate and to strike deals that nobody thought would happen. But in the process of doing that, listen to me, he is going to persecute God's people. And he will do something to interrupt the worship of God in the place of God, in the city of God. In other words, he's going to do something in relation to how the Jews, how God's people at this time, worship God in the temple. Right? And then he gives him a time period and says it's going to last for some time. But it's not going to last forever, but it's going to be for a period of time. And at the end of that period of time, God's going to take care of him and he will no longer have power and authority. And then at the end of the vision, Daniel is like overcome and like lays in his bed for a few days. Which, do you blame him? I mean, come on, really? Let's be honest. Right? So here's the difference. Last week, we had a very general, grand narrative of history. This week, we have a much more specific interpretation. And so what that allows us to do is be more specific in our interpretation or in how we see how this plays out in history. Because remember, this is future for Daniel, but this week's events are past for us. Because see, what we can do is we know how some of this played out. All right, for example, remember Daniel is still living in the Babylonian Empire. But in about a decade, Persia is going to take over. And they are going to absolutely rule the world. They ruled from Afghanistan and India to Turkey. Now you think about that swath of land. They, if you look at some maps, they even ruled areas north of Afghanistan, which is all the other stands that are really hard to pronounce. Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan. At one time, their power extended from there all the way down to all of Iran, almost to the border of India, and all the way to Turkey. But we know that their power didn't last. And we know from history that the Greeks under the Greeks under Alexander the Great utterly crushed the Persians. First, in 334, at the Battle of Granicus River in Turkey, Alexander utterly defeated the Persians. And then 6 months later, in 333 BC, King Darius, after the defeat at Granicus River, Darius was king of all of Persia, met Alexander on the field of battle at the Battle of Issus and utterly got routed at Issus. Then Alexander took a 2-year break to go conquer Palestine and Egypt, and then met Darius again at the Battle of Gaugamela, which is in kind of Kurdish Iraq, that area, and literally routed him for a third time. And that was inevitably the end of the Persian Empire. And if you've read history, you know at the peak, Alexander goes on to conquer basically the entire Persian Empire, defeats the westernmost part of India up to the Indus River, and then turns back. And you know that at the peak of his power, what happens to Alexander? He dies. And if you've read history, you know that after Alexander dies, there's infighting between his successors. And guess what happens? Smaller kingdoms arise that have power. And there's one particular to this story today that we can narrow in on, and it's called, you may not have ever heard of them, and that's okay, because it's just not something you talk about unless you read Daniel. The Seleucid Empire. The Seleucid Empire basically rules the part of the Persian Empire that is Iran, Iraq, and the Holy Land. And they're pretty cool. The Seleucids are pretty cool with the Jews. They let them do their thing until one king comes up. You've probably never heard of his name. And if you haven't, that's fine. You'll learn something new today. His name is Antiochus IV Epiphanes. Right? Antiochus IV, because he's the fourth one. And his little nickname is Epiphanes. And he says, or he takes a completely different view toward the Jews. Listen to me. He persecutes the Jews. He enacts laws that makes it illegal for them to do the rituals, rites, and offer sacrifices in the temple. In fact, he's such a dictator. Do you know what he does? He sets up a statue of Zeus inside the temple. Right? On the altar. And then sacrifices a pig on the altar. And they say, barbecue, right? No. No pigs in Israel. Did you know that today, I don't remember where I read this. This is today, like modern day 21st century Israel. Did you know that there's only, there's only one pig farm in Israel. One. And I read that the owner of the pig farm, his pigs don't even touch the ground. They have built these raised pin things, like wooden pin things, so that it may never be said that a pig touched the ground of Israel. That's today. So Buddy comes up in here, thinks he's the man, sets up an altar, sets up a statue thing or whatever of Zeus inside the temple, and then says, bring me a hog, and sacrifices a pig to Zeus in the temple. And you know what happens? The Jews lose their minds. And guess what happens? The Jews rise up in revolt, throw him and all the Seleucid people out, and end up setting up what's known as the Hasmonean dynasty for 100 years, ultimately until the Romans come in. And so what I'm telling you is what Daniel says, what Daniel sees is going to happen, happens almost lockstep. Now, here's kind of the kicker. That's the story. That's the vision. That's how it played out in history, which is phenomenal, right? And we could walk away and go, wow, that's really cool. But that's not the point that we need to get, that, ooh, that's cool, right? Because if we stop at, ooh, that's cool, then we've just turned a great history lesson, but it really hasn't impacted how we live our life. Because reality is, all this happened from 539 B.C. to about 164 B.C. That was a long time ago, right? And so if we just stop at, ooh, that's cool, that's a cool history lesson, it hasn't done anything for us today, and we've missed the point. So we've got to ask ourselves, how does this apply to our lives? And when we do that, we need to ask ourselves, how does it work for Daniel's readers, Daniel's people who are going to read this? What is God trying to say to them? Because for them, it hadn't happened yet. It's still future. But whatever God's trying to tell them is He's trying to tell us today. And I think there's three things really quickly that God that God's trying to tell them and tell us today. Because what He's trying to tell them still applies to us today. They're on your outline. Here we go, real quickly. Number one, God knows the future because it's His story to tell. How does God know all of these intricate details? Remember, Babylon is still a decade in power. How does He know that Persia and the Medes and Persian are going to have an empire? And how does He know that hundreds of years after they begin ruling, that there's just going to be this guy who's not even a twinkle in his mother's eye yet, named Alexander, who's literally going to rapidly defeat all of these empires? And how does God know that when he's at the pinnacle of his success, he mysteriously dies? And how does he know that four other kingdoms are come up, and then there's going to be one guy who comes up out of those four who's directly going to impact the Jewish people? How does God know all that? Because history is his story to tell. So remember, Daniel is writing this around 540 BC. So every person who reads this story between when it's written and when it happens and after it happens, like we're reading today, knows that God knows what's going to happen in the future before it even happens. Why? Because it is his story to tell. So people are going to say, oh, what about this and what about that? Today, just go to YouTube. Watch the news. You've got prognosticators on everything from the debt ceiling to terrorism to all of that. But all we're doing is what? Guessing. God's not guessing because he knows the future because it's his story to tell. And we see that over and over and over and over again in the Bible. Here's the second thing I think that God is trying to speak to his people and to us today. Not only does God know the future because it's his story to tell, but this story informs God's people that he will not leave them even in the future and even in hardship in the future. Because what is Daniel saying? He's saying, hey guys, now they don't know the time frame. Daniel doesn't know the time frame. We know the time frame because it's history for us. But God's basically telling him, hey look, I'm going to tell y'all, in about 400 years, it's going to be rough. But don't worry, I'm going to take care of it. Because at the end of the vision, Antiochus Epiphanes, the little horn, dies. God raises up people that push out the evil, and they overcome the evil through the Lord's help. Right? And so God is saying, hey, look, I know you don't know when this is going to happen, but in the future, you're going to have times of trouble and times of hardship. But guess what? Just like I'm with you today, I'm going to be with you in the future, even in times of hardship and difficulty. And if we look, honestly, if we look at our lives, haven't we seen that play out in the past? Man, God was faithful here, and God was faithful here, and God was faithful here. And if we look back on the past at how God has been faithful to us in the future, we should know how God's going to be faithful to us in the future. And he's painting that picture for them in this story. God's been faithful. God was faithful in the exile. Even though they were in exile, he was faithful to them in the exile. And that should give them, as we'll see in a minute, trust for God in the future. And guess what? That same thing applies to us today. Let me read you a few verses from the New Testament. Jesus says the last night he's with his disciples, picking up on this idea that God will be with us in the future, even in times of hardship. He tells his disciples this in John 14:16 and 17. And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another helper to be with you forever, even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him. Listen to this last part. For he dwells with you and will be in you. Wow. Author of Hebrews says this. Keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For he said, listen to this. He's quoting Psalms. I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, this is verse 6, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? Two verses from the New Testament. One from Jesus, one for the author of Hebrews, that are picking up the same idea that Daniel is relating to the people he's writing to. That no matter what we go through in life in the future, God will be just as with us, if not maybe even more with us then, like he is today. So, what attitude should that create in us here this morning, today? That attitude it should create in us is trust. Trust. Last week it was hope that one day God will finally and once for all deal with people and evil and people who perpetrate evil. Today, the attitude that should be generated in our life is trust. Why trust? Well, let me ask you a question. We've already established that God knows the future because it's His story to tell, which means there's this big theology word which means God's sovereign. That means He's in control, right? We've already established that. So if God's in control of the future, don't you think God already knows what's going to go on in your life before you do? Right? Let me read you a verse. We read this week in our Wednesday Bible study, and I thought, ooh, that's going to fit real good. This, you may not have read Ecclesiastes a lot. You should read it. It's a pretty cool book. Here's what the author, which is Solomon, says in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. That which is, listen to this, that which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And he's saying that in the context of God. So from God's perspective, what's going on right now, God knew about yesterday. And what's going to go on tomorrow, God knew about yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before. What he's saying is everything, whether it's present or future for you and me, God already knows about. So look at me. You don't know what's going to happen. And other people sure don't know what's going to happen in your life. Right? So who are you going to trust? Why don't we just trust the one who already knows what's going to happen to work it out? What does he say? For our good and his glory. Right? Let me read you another verse. Because if we know that God already knows the future, why don't we trust Him today for the future? And if God is sovereign over the future, and if He is sovereign over the future and will always be with us even in times of hardship, then what have we to fear? Nothing. Psalm 118, 5 through 7. Listen to this. Out of my distress I called on the Lord. The Lord answered me and set me free. The Lord is on my side. I will not fear. Listen to this. This is the verse I just read from Hebrews. What can man do to me? The Lord is on my side as my helper. I shall look in triumph on those who hate me. Did you hear what he said? The Lord is on my side. I will not fear. What can man do to me? If God knows the future before it even happens, and He's already said in the future He's going to be with us no matter what happens in the future, there is but one attitude we have, and that is to trust Him in the present for the future. I don't know what's going to happen. I'd be guessing. You don't know what's happened. But we know who does know what happens. And He's already said that whatever happens, He's going to be with us. So what have we to fear? I read this week that the Bible, over 300 times, I read one said 365 times. I said one that read that it was 300 plus. At least 365 times. I don't know. Be a good project for you to work on. Over 300 times. To not fear. And look, let's be honest. Hey, there's a lot of fear being sold around. Fear over corona. Fear over people. Fear over people who got it, who don't have it, may have it, may not have it. We don't know. We just afraid of everybody. Hey, you want to know what the latest one is? Because, you know, like the spikes kind of tail down, so we got to have something else to fear now. Inflation. That means your money ain't going to go as far. Because of inflation. And you know what I heard? It's runaway inflation. Man, it's going to be crazy. It's going to last for years. I heard this week, it's going to last for another year and a half. And there's nothing the government can do to stop it. And even if they try to stop it, they're going to make it worse. Now, I'm not an economist, so I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm just telling you, if you're looking for something to fear, you got your choice. Corona, debt inflation, terrorism, right? Incompetent leaders. We could sit here all day and list everything we could fear in life. But what I'm saying is, what does the psalmist say? What can man do to me? Right? Because we know who knows the future, and he, the one who knows the future, has already said, I'm going to be with you in the future. So what is there but to do, but to trust in the Lord? And that is the attitude that should be generated in us. I'm going to read you one other verse, and you already probably know this verse, right? It's the most quoted psalm by David, Psalm 23, right? I want to read you one verse, and Grant's going to lead us in a time of response. Verse 4, listen to this. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I read two translations that I thought were pretty cool. They read this way, even though I walk through the sunless places, even though I walk through the darkest valleys, I will, what's the next word? I will fear what? Hold on, wait a minute. I will fear what evil?
No.
Some evil?
No.
A little evil?
No.
No evil. I will fear no evil. Why? For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Hey, look, I don't know what your week's going to be like. You could have the best week of your life. You could have the worst week of your life. You could have somewhere in the middle. It's probably going to be most of us, right? Some bad, some good, some in between. Some of it's just life. But look, I know who knows the future, and there is but one attitude to have because he said he's going to be with us in the future, and that is to absolutely 100% trust him. So look, I don't know what your week's going to be like, but let me implore you, let me encourage you. Trust Him. Trust God this week. All right, pray with me. Grant's going to lead us in a song. Lord, thank You so much for this day. Thank You that no matter what goes on in our lives and no matter what's going on in us, that, Lord, You are with us and will always be with us. You will never leave us nor forsake us. Lord, You are with us, and therefore we should fear no evil but trust in You. Lord, help us to trust You this week. In Your name we pray. Amen. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.